We should just no because this it's coming out. It's coming out later.
Underground Writing Podcast.
We'll punch that.
Welcome to this week's Underground Writing Podcast.
Okay, I'm just gonna say I'm Matt Mallion.
Yeah,
okay.
Let's go from there.
All right. What can prove my point? I'm grasping onto hope and I'm never letting go. I'm Matt Mallion, director of Underground Writing, a program offering creative writing workshops in at-risk community settings.
I'm Janice Blackmore, a site host and advisory board member for Underground Writing, and also the Migrant Graduation Specialist for the Mount Vernon School District, where I'm the advisor for the Migrant Leaders Club.
And I'm Alvin Shim, producer for the Underground Writing Podcast. On our biweekly podcast, we read and discuss a piece of writing by an Underground Writing student and briefly update listeners about what's happening in the program as a whole. Because we're a creative writing program serving at-risk populations, we do not mention students by name. Today, listeners, we're doing another community spotlight episode where we talk to people in the wider Underground Writing family so as to highlight them and the important work they're doing in the community. So welcome to the podcast, Janice Blackmore. It's great to have you with us.
Thanks, Alvin. Thanks, Matt. It's great to be here.
So for starters, Janice, can you give us a brief historical overview of the Migrant Leaders Club? For example, how and why it started?
Sure. I was hired at the Mount Vernon School District back in 2007 to work with migrant students in the middle schools to make sure that they stayed engaged in school and ultimately graduated. And it was a little overwhelming at first because I had a really large caseload of migrant students. Mount Vernon is an agricultural area, so we have a lot of migrant students here. Migrant students being kids whose parents work in agriculture and they've moved around because of the work their parents do. And so I was trying to come up with ways where I could work with a larger group of kids together in one place because I was finding it really hard to get one-on-one time with all of the kids on my caseload. So I started a group called the Migrant Girls Club at that time. I guess to tell you the truth, I wasn't quite sure what to do with the boys yet. So I started with the girls. And after about a year, those girls pulled the boys in and we changed the name to the Migrant Leaders Club pretty quickly. And in the beginning, we really just had a group where we worked a lot on self-confidence, identity building, feeling good about where you come from, where your parents come from, your culture. But the kids were really motivated to make change in the world. And really, I have spent the last 10 years just being dragged along by the kids as they decide what they want to do, figure out projects, make those projects happen, and I simply just don't ever say no. So when they get an idea, I always say, okay, what's the first step? Let's figure out what the first step is, and off we go. So we've done a lot of things in Migrant Leaders Club over the last 10 years. You want me to tell you about some of those?
Sure.
I don't think we have time for that.
Okay. It's been nice talking with you both.
Thank you very much. No, please, go ahead.
A lot of the work that we do in Migrant Leaders Club is based around storytelling. A large portion of the students in Mount Vernon are indigenous Mexican students, so they come from the states of Oaxaca and Guerrero in southern Mexico. And indigenous cultures have always been storytelling societies. And so we come from a place of storytelling for that reason, but also because I find that most of the students that I work with have been through quite a bit of trauma in their lives. And I've found that the storytelling, when students start to tell their own personal stories, it's very healing for them. And so we've tried to find different ways for students to tell their stories. We've done a lot of writing. We have done presenting and public speaking. We've done photography. We've done music, rapping, art exhibits. We've tried a lot of different things. And I think the two key pieces have been the writing and the public speaking, because that has been the best way for the students to educate their community and the larger community, which is our country, about what their lives are like and the lessons, the many lessons that we all can learn from the different experiences that they've had being 99% of Mexican heritage living here in the United States in the times that we're going through right now. And those, the writing and the public speaking have led us to do quite a bit of travel as well. So I've traveled all over the country with the kids. We've been to New York with you guys. We've been to Florida, Kentucky, Texas, California, Oregon, and all over Washington. So stories have been an important part of my work since I began doing this job 11 years ago. And I remember working with an eighth grade student, which would have made her about 14. And she was having a lot of attendance issues, which, of course, is a red flag for a student. And so I started going over to her house. I went to her house many times. Her family was a Mixteco-speaking family. Mixteco is an indigenous language from southern Mexico. And there were a lot of people living in her home. There were probably about 14 people living in her two-bedroom home. So I would go over, and it was a little chaotic. It was noisy. I always felt really welcomed. I was always offered something to eat. I enjoyed it. I lived in Oaxaca for 3 years, so it felt comfortable for me. I liked going over there. And on maybe the third or fourth time that I was over at the house, the student's mom was holding a little boy who was about two. There were a lot of little kids running around, and so she was holding a little boy that was two. And she asked one of the other children in the family, not my student, another child, to translate, to interpret for her, because she only spoke Mixteco. And she said, "You keep coming over to our house and asking why my daughter isn't coming to school, and I'd like you to know why my daughter's not coming to school." And I said, "That would be great." And she said, "Because this is her son." And she was holding the two-year-old. So that was a hard moment. Because she was 14.
Did it hit you like it just hit us? Like you had no idea?
I had no idea. Yeah. Yeah. That was new for me. And, once her mom shared that with me, then the student really opened up and started sharing a lot of her story with me. And it was the first time that I realized that these kids come to middle school every day and they pretend that they're okay.
Mm-hmm.
And they wear these masks. They don't let their teachers know. They don't let their friends know that there are other things happening at home. So I started spending a lot more time sitting quietly with kids and encouraging them to share more about themselves. The more I sat quietly, the more that they told me. And as they started sharing all of these stories with me, I just really felt that it shouldn't just be me hearing these stories, that these were really important stories that other people needed to hear too. And it felt like such a gift and such an honor that I was getting to hear all these kids' stories. And I wanted to be able to share that with other people. And when I realized how healing it was for the kids to be sharing these stories with me, I thought, maybe there's something to this. Maybe this can be healing for the kids and healing for the people in our community too, because this is a really hard time. Communities like Mount Vernon tend to be very divided, and I feel like sometimes these kids' stories could be the thing that really pulls people together in a community like this. And I still talk to that student. She's about 25 now and lives here in town, and she's doing great. In fact, I have a feeling I'm about to get her son in middle school any moment now.
So let me ask you this, because it's connected to what you're sharing and how you're sharing it. You have been doing this for 11 years, and I can only imagine the number of stories you carry with you. I know from my own experience, which is not 11 years, in the stories that I feel like I carry, you carry that many more. And the Migrant Leaders Club is, of course, a large group between two middle schools and a high school.
Yeah, we have about 75 members.
And you live in Seattle. Let's mention that. You live in Seattle. You commute up here. It's over an hour.
Oh,
drive.
Everyone was thinking that I was such a great, normal person, and now they all think I'm a little crazy.
Well, I want to know, well, okay, not crazy, but what motivates you? What's keeps you in the game, as it were? Because it's demanding. The amount of stories you're carrying and the commute. And so I'm just interested, obviously you have a real heart for these youth. I mean, that's very apparent, but I'm just wondering about, as you think through things, how you think about all that.
Sure. Well, first and most importantly, it's because I see that the work that I'm doing with the kids is helping. It's the students, it lightens their load. Kids are excited about what we're doing in club, which makes them excited to come to school, because club is a school activity. The students in the club are graduating, they're going to college, and they're helping each other. And so this is a really, it's an important space that they have created and that I've helped them create. Secondly, I get a lot out of it. It's absolutely my vocation. It's what I love. It's why I drive up here. It's these kids that I really enjoy working with. I enjoy working with the students, the indigenous students from Mexico in particular, because of my connection to Oaxaca and that part of Mexico. I enjoy working with kids who have resilience and who have struggled and have an appreciation for what they have. I have an appreciation for kids who have a certain depth to them. I think it would be hard for me to work with another kind of student after work. These kids are so incredibly special and capable and inspire me and push me and move me to do things that I would never have dreamed of doing on my own. So as I said, I really just feel like I run around just trying to keep up with them because they're going places, they're changing the world, and it's really fun to run alongside them while they do it. So that's why I drive up here.
I love that the first step, as you told it, to getting these kids to graduate is to build a relationship and work on their self-worth and see them as people and not, and that step one wasn't practical study skills and organization of binders and things.
I definitely tried doing the organizational skills and the binder skills. That's what I was, you know, a lot of people tell you that that's what you should do, and you definitely, you don't let the kids get too close, and you don't, you know, you don't show too much of yourself. You certainly don't share anything from your private life. You know, I was told lots of things.
You don't go to their house.
No, you definitely don't go to their houses four times and eat their food. There were a lot of things that I was told and that I'm still told. Mm-hmm. It just became apparent really quickly that those standard ways of working with kids was not working with these kids. I had a history from some other work that I'd done of doing a lot of home visits. And I think because of my time living in Oaxaca, the place that I felt most comfortable was in their homes. So that was a natural one for me, just being who I am and having the experience that I'd had. And you could just see when you go to these kids' homes and you get to know their families and their little brothers and sisters, that everything changed in your relationship with the kids once you got back to school. So that's been something that I've continued, and that's been good because knowing the families has been really important with the kinds of things that I ask for with these kids. I mean, the traveling across the country, I travel a lot with undocumented students. That is, it's risky. It's a lot to ask of these families. We have a student whose parents have lost a son, and to ask him to get on an airplane and fly to New York, that's asking a lot of these families. It's scary for those parents. So it's important. It's important for me to build those relationships with not just the kids, but the families. And I could see that really early on. So yeah, I don't talk a whole lot about academics, to tell you the truth, other than just basic check-ins on whether kids need me to help them talk to teachers and things like that. We really focus mostly on out of school stuff because I feel like if they can clear their minds of all of the stuff that's happening outside of school, they're perfectly capable of learning inside of school. Kids aren't learning because their heads are so full of trauma and fear and other things that get in the way of learning. Hmm.
I was thinking again last week about that, about the time building up to the 2016 election, and we were doing a number of workshops at that time, like kind of traditional workshops when we first started collaborating together. And I remember sitting in the workshop the day before the election and hearing stories. And I think it was all young women that day.
This would have been middle school students, right?
Yeah, middle school students, right. And hearing the stories of, you know, border crossings and this sort of thing. And it was so much anxiety at that time about what was going to happen. What is your take now on, you know, we're 2 years into this, the current political situation, shall we call it, out in Washington, D.C. What's your take now on how the students are feeling? What's has the anxiety lessened, or what are they kind of, what's your pulse, or what's your feel for the pulse of that kind of situation, how they're feeling?
The anxiety has not lessened.
Okay.
It's hard to answer that definitively. It can be really hard to pull apart the strands of the anxiety that these kids feel. There's so many reasons for them to feel anxiety living here in the United States in the ways that their families are forced to live in order to survive here in the United States. I can tell you that in the last year to year and a half, we have seen a huge increase in mental health crises, particularly amongst our middle school kids, our 11 to 14-year-olds, are becoming suicidal at a rate that I've never seen. And I can't say that that's because of our political climate, but it sure doesn't help.
Yeah.
It's taken a situation that was already really bad for these families who are living in such extreme poverty. Because they do field work, and it's just impossible for families to survive on the wages that are paid to our field workers in this country. So to take families who are already suffering under the crushing oppression of that kind of lifestyle, and to add in the language that we hear on our TVs and from our administration, and that the kids then in turn hear from their classmates, that unfortunately they might even hear sometimes from their teachers. That can be really hard. I think that their parents have been, most of their parents are undocumented. Their parents have been living in fear for years. I don't know that that fear is necessarily any stronger now than it ever has been. We had so many parents deported under Obama that the number of deportations here in Mount Vernon has not particularly changed. I think it's just hard to just hear that you are not wanted and that you do not belong here as often as these kids have to hear it now.
I remember, you know, having a reaction when Trump was elected, and then me and some white friends were saying, "Oh, this is terrible. How could it have come to this?" And then there were some Mexican friends in the room that did not have that reaction to us that we had. And they illuminated us and said, "The president never speaks on our behalf anyway, so this is not news to us," which is helpful for me to realize that. And I wonder if your students keep up with the tweets that our president hatefully casts out as the rest of us do, and if that affects them in a way that's different, or if that's more of the same as from before.
I think whether they read his specific tweets or not is probably irrelevant, because it's everywhere. I feel like it's just that kind of talk and that kind of language is just everywhere. And, you know, kids tend to replicate what adults do. High school tends to be a small microcosm of what's going on in the greater world. And so I don't think it's Trump's tweets that bother them. I think it's their peers, Snapchat posts and Instagram posts, that's the stuff that's getting to them, because it's just, they're just replicating what they hear the adults around them doing. You know, we can focus on how hard it is right now under this administration and this the government that we have right now, but what I'd really like to focus on is how my students have answered to that and how they have responded to that. While it might be hard and we can shed some tears over it, you know, they get up in the Lincoln Theater every year for the last, this will be our fourth year doing it, and they tell their community exactly how they feel about Trump, about immigration, about deportations, about what our government is doing to their people. And they speak to it, and they talk about what they want to change and what they're going to do in the future, and that's powerful.
So it sounded like you were working with this. You were working with your kids on telling stories and sharing experiences, and then Matt came along with the idea of underground writing, and you responded positively to that.
I sure did.
Okay.
Yeah, we had in 2012 we published a book called Dreamfields, which again was just, you know, I'd been loosely doing some writing with kids. It was part of our storytelling. And so I was collecting all of these incredible written stories, and I thought I should not be the only one seeing these. Like, this could change our entire community if people knew what was happening and how amazing these kids are. So we published the book, book was great, but I really felt like there was some like there was something missing. Like we could have gone deeper. The writing could have we could have gone farther. And so when Matt approached me with Underground Writing, saying that he could come in and do writing workshops with the kids. He's a writer. He has a background in writing. I was like, this is exactly what I've been waiting for, because these kids are they're telling their stories. They're writing already. Like, let's take it to the next level. Let's read some literature. Let's read the Dreamfields book, because at this point, many of the kids had not been around when we wrote the Dreamfields book. These were the younger kids. And let's help the kids take it a step farther, a little bit deeper, a little bit better. And that's exactly what happened. Matt and Jennifer would come in with Underground Writing. Depending on the group, depending on the year, it looked a little different, but at least a couple times a month, present literature to them and do some writing. And we got some beautiful, beautiful, very different writing that came from those sessions. And now we're working on our second Dreamfields book, which we're hoping to publish by the end of this school year. And that's really exciting to me. Thank you, Matt. It's been a great 4-year collaboration.
It has. It has. And great for us, too. I mean, you mentioned earlier feeling like being amidst these stories and these youth, middle school and high schoolers, sort of like a sacred space. And I feel that at all our sites. And I also feel it here. It's not, there's something like, every site's different. And so I remember spaces like what I mentioned about the day before the election. I'll always remember that moment and how the young women were sharing their stories in a very honest, vulnerable way. And it just felt like it was this mixture of like an honor to be there, sacred space, hard to be there because they're difficult stories. But I just feel like collaborating with you all and being able to, and we're more a bit more on the outside than you are, obviously, but coming in and being able to interact to some degree, getting to know the youth to a certain degree has just been it's been fantastic for us and really life changing in the ways stories and relationships and people can change your lives. So, I mean, it's been an honor for us.
I think that's well said. I think every moment when a child, when any person shares their story, it's a very sacred moment. You guys got to witness that a little bit today. You were here for club at the high school today. And we have a new student in club. One of the other club members brought this student a couple weeks ago. And generally, I pay attention when one of the club members brings a new student, because there's usually a reason why they're bringing that new student into this safe place that we've created. And so, yeah, today that student said to me, you know, I'm 18 years old and I have a story and I've never told anyone before. And he, you know, and you watched as he sat there and then started to tell me that story and he started to cry. And he just scratched the surface today. And we have another meeting planned. And it's just so important that these students have a safe place where they can start to unpack all of the things that they've lived through in their short lives. And you know, you asked me earlier how you mentioned that it must be hard to have 11 years worth of stories in floating around in my head. And, you know, I think that the important thing to remember is that we can't go back in time. We can't change what the kids have been through. And sometimes I don't know that I would want to, because their lived experience is what makes them so special and what makes them so such incredible people. But I think that what storytelling and writing can help them do is to see their life experience in a new way and to see it in a way that they choose, to tell that story in a way that they choose and that makes them feel powerful and like the amazing, amazing members of our community that they are.
One brown and one white, but that's history. Now back to me, my struggle, my pain, and my misery. I've been left as less all of my life.
So we interviewed Janice Blackmore a couple months ago, and we're back with her again to tag on some extra comments, ideas, and discussion elements about the Migrant Leaders Club being in transition in the coming months and at the start of next academic year.
And also, just some very exciting news that the Migrant Leaders Club book, When the Dust Rises, will be out next month, and we want you listeners to know about it. So Janice, welcome.
Thank you, Matt. I'm happy to be here.
And why don't you tell us a bit about the book?
Sure. I'm really excited to tell people about the book. The title is When the Dust Rises. We're very excited about the title. Everything about creating a book is part of a process, and I'm happy to report that as of today, we have a cover, too. Each part is really exciting. And this is a book that was written by the migrant students here in Mount Vernon. It's an anthology of their writings, monologues, raps, poems, all of their thoughts about what it is like to be a migrant teenager here in Mount Vernon. We have a foreword in this book by U.S. Poet Laureate Juan Felipe Herrera, and that is really exciting because I just feel like the first book, the second book, they're magical books, but not all people are going to stop and buy them or check them out. And I feel like just by having that foreword by Juan Felipe Herrera, who is so famous here in the United States, a former farm worker himself, I just really feel that that's going to bring even more attention to this book. And really our goal in Migrant Leaders Club has been for the last 10 years that we have existed to educate people in our communities about the lives of these migrant youth. So many people don't understand what it's like to be the children of farm workers, what it's like to start working in the fields when you're 6 years old, what it's like to be undocumented or have undocumented parents. And I feel like this collaboration between Underground Writing, the Migrant Leaders Club, and Juan Felipe Herrera is really going to allow this book to get out to even more people than our first book did. So I'm just really excited to see where this book takes the students, where this book takes the Migrant Leaders Club, and where this book takes the collaboration that our club has with Underground Writing. I can't wait to see what's next.
And we agree. We feel the same. And just to mention, we also... at the site, at the Migrant Leaders Club site, it was myself and you and Jennifer Morrison Hendricks, who worked there in tandem, together, working with the kids and the editing and the processing. And you, if I'm got the timeline right, you were about 3 years into your current position around that when you decided to do the first book. What was that kind of? Did you come into the position thinking I'm going to do a book, or did you start the position and realize like these stories? We need to get this out. It needs to be through writing. Like, what was that like before Dreamfields?
Yeah, so I started my job in 2007, and it was in 2010 that we decided to do the book. So you're absolutely right on the timeline. But it wasn't my idea. It definitely wasn't something that I came into this job thinking that I would do. In 2010, I had a group of about five students who had traveled for the first time with club. They had gone to Washington, D.C., and they came back from Washington, D.C., and walked into my office, and one of them said, "Miss Blackmore, we have seen things that we didn't know were out there, and we are ready to do something big." And it was very exciting to hear eighth graders say that. And it was within the next month that they laid out a plan to write a book and make a movie about what it was like to be migrant, because they were feeling frustrated that their teachers would often assume that they were lazy when they were not getting their homework in on time or when they were really sleepy in class. And they wanted their teachers to understand that it wasn't because they were lazy, it was because they were working before and after school sometimes. They were responsible for all of their younger siblings. They were making up to 50 tortillas a day for their families. They had a lot of responsibilities, and they wanted their teachers to understand that. And so it really started as at a very local level of the kids wanting to educate their community here in Mount Vernon about their lives, and it grew from there. And so, as in everything that we do in Migrant Leaders Club, this started as a student idea, and I simply opened the pathways so that they could do what it was that they wanted to do. And ever since that time, I've always said I feel a little bit like I'm the student's agent, like their booking agent. They're amazing, and all these opportunities open for them, and I just follow along behind them, trying to keep up with them.
As we mentioned at the top of this segment, there's a transition coming up, and I'm wondering if you can speak to that, what that's about, what that you may not know everything it's going to entail, but what's going on with that?
So as I mentioned, I started my job as the migrant graduation specialist for the Mount Vernon School District in 2007. So that it's been 12 years since I started my job, and it's been 10 years that we have had the club up and running. For the last 7 years, I've been commuting to Mount Vernon from Seattle. So my family relocated from the Skagit Valley to Seattle in 2012. And I've done that commute because I love my job. I love my job with all my heart. And I'm fairly certain I will never have a job again that I love as much as I do here. I really feel that I have found my true vocation in the work that I do with the students here. But at the same time, I've known that I can't continue to make this commute, and I can't continue to be as far away as I am from my family. And I'd like to think also that there's another chapter for me, and that there's something else waiting for me out there, more work that I can do, different work that I can do, and I'm excited to figure out what that next step might be. So with a very heavy heart and in a very bittersweet way, I've decided to leave my position at the end of this school year, so at the end of June, and head out into the world to see what awaits me next, and I don't know what that is at the moment. So what that means for the Migrant Leaders Club is that we're going to need to find a new advisor for the Migrant Leaders Club, and I'm certain that we can do that. We're not sure how exactly that's going to shake out yet. It's a little frustrating, the timing, because we have this amazing book coming out right now. And as I said, I'm really excited to see where this book takes the students. And I likely won't be around to walk that path with them. But I will certainly be watching from the sidelines and cheering them on, and we'll make sure that the transition goes as smoothly as possible. And we're really excited that the collaboration with Underground Writing will continue with Migrant Leaders Club, regardless of who the advisor is. The students drive that club. The students know what's important to them. The collaboration with Underground Writing is very important to the students, and they'll make sure that that collaboration continues. When we find these powerful, resilient kids in Migrant Leaders Club, it is the values and the strength that they have learned through the hardship that they have had that has allowed them to really blossom and become the amazing individuals they are, and I'm super proud of them.
Well, you'll be missed greatly by the students, and just, I think I speak on behalf of our whole organization, that the club and you personally have been among high inspiration points for us here in the Valley, and we're grateful that you've been with us on the podcast here, but also more so for your work here in the Valley. And what's ahead? I think there are exciting things ahead for you, and I trust that you will find that in due time.
Thanks, Matt. It's an exciting time. I don't think this is the last you're gonna see or hear of me. Is there really a God? It's all worth if it could. Life is full of false hopes, of lies and of hatred. There is bad and good, but everything is tempted. It's all sugar-coated. We already know this. We have our own eyes, so we're making our own choices. Yeah, and I'm praying for the people that had never had no choice. Yeah, I'm praying for the people that had never had no voice. You can make a difference, but you have to.